Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Lindsay et al. Titled, Guidelines for Measuring Cardiac Physiology in Mice. This article was published January 5th, 2018. Joining me today are consulting editor David Cass and authors Mary Lindsay, Marielle Scherer-Crosby, Zam Kisiri, Yitka Virag, and Lisandra De Castro Brash. Let's get started.
Thanks very much, Kara. And let me just throw out the first question to the whole group, which is, why do you think that it was an important thing to do to have this Guidelines on Cardiac Physiology Measurements article published?
This is Marielle Scherer-Crosby. With the increasing discussions on the rigor and reproducibility, we thought that now was the time to get the guidelines out, and AJP Heart was the right place to establish these guidelines. And, you know, I have to say that acquiring physiological measurements in mice is difficult, and accurate protocols are not always followed, even in publications.
That's exactly right. As we were discussing putting this article together, all of the co-authors had experiences where they had had a reviewer, either on a grant or a manuscript, that gave a comment that was not appropriate or not accurate. And so we wanted to set the record straight and help these reviewers to do their job better.
So what information does the article provide?
Hi, this is Yitka Virag. This article, Dave, is a comprehensive examination of the different approaches that can be used to evaluate cardiac physiology and the alterations in structure and function that can result from a range of pathologies.
Hi, this is Lisandra De Castro Brash. In this article, we also provide the strengths and limitations for each of the imaging modalities.
And we list variables that are useful for assessing cardiac physiology under different pathological conditions.
And we provide an extensive reference list that will be useful to those who are new to cardiac physiology.
And last, we also report findings from our analysis. We've analyzed articles published in the AJP journal that have used ECHO.
Certainly, if a large amount of cardiac physiology assessment that's done today involves imaging, particularly ECHO and tissue Doppler, et cetera. So the article spends a fair amount of time on that. So tell me more about the analytics that you use for these ECHO measurements that you report.
Well, we started out by evaluating 38 articles that had been published in an 18-month window between the 1st of January in 2016 and the time we did this analysis, which was in July of 2017. We looked for completeness of the information that was provided in each article and assessed the quality of the ECHO values that were reported.
And I have to say that we were quite surprised to see that 58% of these articles did not report the heart rates, and 82% did not report what instrument or probe they used or other details about the imaging. So it was a real need.
And of course, there was a lot of variability and a wide range of values that were observed in the published literature. Some of this was, of course, due to the anesthetic that was used. But there were also some quality control issues in some of these reports that needed to be addressed.
So based on this analysis, we developed a checklist for the authors and the reviewers on what we consider the minimum information that should be provided in the methods and results sections. This is table 4 in the article.
We also provided a range of values that you could expect to get if imaging a C57 Black's health adult mouse using isoflurane. And the reason we did this, it's because it was the most commonly used anesthetic in the literature. And we have this as table 3.
So this is a bit of a loaded question, but would you have some sort of consensus on what you view as a gold standard for measuring cardiac physiology in mice?
Actually, David, as we were preparing this article, we decided to not use the term gold standard towards any one imaging modality. But based on the number of the published reports on animals or small rodents, echocardiography seems to be the most commonly used technique. It is also quite versatile in terms of offering M-mode, B-mode, tissue Doppler imaging, and EKB and speckle tracking, which is a more recently used technique. So these different modes allows the investigators to evaluate heart function in a heart disease where remodeling can occur in a uniform manner, like a hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, or in a non-uniform manner, such as myocardial infarction. But it's also important to keep in mind that echocardiography also has its own limitations. For instance, it's entirely dependent on wall motion or the blood flow, the movement of blood. It can be affected by preload or afterload. So there are limitations to using echocardiography, but at this time, it seems to be a more widely used compared to all other techniques.
Zam is exactly right. One of the final considerations that we want readers of this article to take home is that having a well-designed experiment includes selecting the imaging modality that's most appropriate for the question that's being asked. And so figure 3 in our article lays out experimental design considerations for cardiac physiology evaluations. Issues such as randomizing and blinding are covered, as well as how to reproducibly image and analyze, and how to report results that allow others to reproduce or extend your findings. And so what imaging modality you select is maybe not as important as the quality of the imaging that you do.
Yes, and I would like to add to that that, you know, in an experiment, it's often helpful if you want to define physiology to have different modalities to assess the physiology. For example, if you want to assess cardiac diastolic function, you not only need echocardiography, but also certainly hemodynamics and other methods to assess, to have a complete picture of the cardiac physiology.
So echo Doppler is one of those types of analysis where you have the opportunity to get data in a conscious animal and as well as under anesthesia. Some of the other modalities like MRI, you really can't do that. So this provides people with options. So could you discuss a bit when investigators might favor conscious over anesthetized animals?
Sure. So first of all, the option of recording in conscious animals, as you mentioned, is, you know, it only applies to echocardiography and certainly not to other types of physiology measurements like pressure volume loops, for example. Now, when you perform echo recording in conscious animals, it's very important that the animals are acclimatized to the person performing the measurements, the area where the recording will take place, and generally the environment. And so, this requires great patience and skills and times to achieve, and it's not always feasible unless you're really very trained in that matter.
Right. And also, it's really important to ensure that the person who's acquiring those images is consistent with respect to the probe placement, which of course is heavily dependent on the orientation of the animal and can be also obscured by surgical manipulations.
Just adding a couple of words to what Mariel and Jitka just described, it's important to consider how much time it actually takes to properly train the animal as well as the person who is doing the recording for these imaging processes. So if there is a large sample size, if you have to record from a large number of animals, it may not be physically achievable to train all the animals to the point that they are not in a stressed condition. Therefore, when you are dealing with a large number of animals, it may be best to use sedated animals and do a proper recording rather than insisting in recording in conscious animals who may be in a very stressed situation.
Yes, so I would also like to add for those that use the anesthetics, it is very important to not affect heart or lung performance. As we said before, isoflurane is the most often used for heart function measurements. It is essential, though, that whoever is using the isoflurane needs to acquire the image at a physiological relevant heart rate. And they should also report which heart rate they're acquiring when they're publishing.
So the article also talks a bit about magnetic resonance imaging. And certainly in the clinical arena, when we need to get good 3D imaging and objective calculations of things like heart volumes and thickness and function, it's hard to beat because it really eliminates a lot of the variance from patient to patient. And presumably the same thing really applies with small animals. So why hasn't MRI been used more? What do you see as the impediments? And I guess how do you view it in the overall armamentarium that we have available?
Yes, David. MRI definitely offers advantages, but unfortunately, it also comes with some limitations. And right now, those are the low availability, low portability, expense, time and expertise needed to acquire those measurements. And there's also still some issues with temporal resolution. It would be very nice if more universities would offer MRI for small animal imaging, but I would say mostly due to expenses, that is not very common.
I would also say that I don't think MRI will ever replace echocardiography in mice. It takes more time and it necessitates quite deep sedation. However, you know, for some of the heart structure, for example, the right ventricle, it is clearly irreplaceable, the MRI.
So as was mentioned, I think, right up at the beginning of this conversation, one of the aspects of imaging, which really is looking at motion, is that it really doesn't incorporate the load, whether it's regional stress or global load for the heart. And a lot of our more precise metrics of contractile function and certainly diastolic function are hard to interpret unless that load is incorporated. So as you may know, I mean, my lab was involved with miniaturizing pressure volume catheters back in the 1990s. And this is certainly another whole arena for characterization of cardiac physiology. Let me throw it out to you, then I may comment myself. What do you view are the advantages that you could get from pressure volume loop analysis? And I suppose, what are some of the disadvantages?
Certainly, PV loops are a wonderful measure of basic cardiac mechanics. You can get stroke volume, cardiac output, ejection fraction, contractility, stroke work, energy, all the mechanical energy that's generated by contraction, as well as the end-systolic and diastolic pressure volume relationships and things like that. It's been a while since I've done it, but I remember it being very technically challenging to place that catheter correctly.
So one of the things that I'd say is that, in fact, the pressure volume loop stuff has sort of moved its way in many places into core labs where there are people who become quite expert at manipulating this very small catheter and effectively getting reproducible data. The obvious issues of how you instrument, whether it's closed chest, open chest, how accurate the position of the catheter is, all these things really have to be taken care of, and you need someone who's quite skilled. That's for sure. My own group, this used to be handled by individual postdocs over years, and after a while where you train someone up and it'd be great, and then they would go back to wherever they came from originally and you're back to ground zero. So at this point, having a really good core and someone who's quite expert at it is, I think, essential. But the main thing that remains unique about this approach is that it's really the only one that we've got going where you're simultaneously incorporating motion, volume change, strain essentially at the chamber level with force, pressure, and all of the advantages that evolved for decades with the approach are there and clearly can be done in any size animal, pretty much, you know, down to small mice. But you're right, it takes special training and people who know how to use the software properly and, you know, get it right.
Right. I think that PV loops are wonderful for the types of things that they can measure. I think one of the major limitations, though, is that it's a one-time thing. It's an endpoint at the very end of the experiment, whereas these other technologies like echocardiography and MRI, you can do serially, which enables you to track any kind of chronic changes that may be occurring, which is very valuable.
So one question I'd like to pose to you is, what would you like in your toolbox of the future? We have what we have with ultrasound and Doppler imaging and with MR and with pressure volume. What's missing that you would love to see develop that would help a lot?
Well, for me, it would be better tools to image diastolic properties. We know that some of the newer echo instruments for animals right now, they offer 4D capabilities with a Z stacking. Those will provide increased sensitivity, but this is all very recent. And even this morning, I went to PubMed and I did a search, and currently there are no reports using experimental models in these new 4D instruments.
So if I had to add something to a toolbox, it would actually be a better tissue characterization by imaging methods, and in particularly by echocardiography and very high frequency and very high speed echocardiography. So I would be very interested to have this available in rodents.
Following up on that, I'm really excited about the potential for spatial and temporal microscopic imaging of cardiomyocyte function in vivo at the single cell level. Microregion specific types of analysis are going to be necessary to interpret the magnitude of the effect of any intervention, experimental intervention that you're imposing. And so there's intravital imaging that's being done by several groups in Boston from MIT and Harvard and Mass Gen. And they've been collaborating on this over the last 3 years. And currently it's challenging because of there's significant, obviously, 3D motion artifact caused by heart and lungs. And this requires tissue stabilizers, acquisition gating methods, tracers, and all that kind of stuff and there are complicated algorithms that are associated with it too, but hopefully it will come of age soon and be accessible for everybody.
Anybody else?
Along the line of what Mariel suggested in tissue characterization of the heart, it would really be unique if we can characterize the interstitium. We usually refer to it as the extracellular matrix, and somehow it gets diluted to just the fibrotic tissue. But for those of us who work on the matrix, we know there is a lot more to the matrix than just the fibrillar collagen. Like the proteoglycans, the entire interstitial space. If we can characterize that in the process of disease progression, I think that will add another level of comprehension to what we know of the heart disease.
And I'll just add inflammation too. It'd be nice to be able to more closely monitor inflammatory responses.
So sort of a series of biological imaging modalities. So let me throw out a wrap-up question if you're going to give us a take-home message that you want the readers to know.
Well, the take-home message, one big one, would be that prospective planning of study design is mandatory for a good reproducibility of cardiac physiology experiments.
And this includes randomization, blinding of the experimental groups, and inclusion of adequate sample size for a high-power statistics analysis.
There is a wide range of imaging approaches that can be used, and each has their strengths and weaknesses, and it's really important to describe all the methodology and include all the parameters as we've indicated in the checklist.
Knowing what information you need will help you to determine which approach or approaches to use.
Basically, we hope that this guidelines increases rigor and reproducibility with cardiac physiology measurements.
All right. I want to thank everyone for this discussion and for really providing excellent input through this article into how to approach cardiac physiology measurements in small animals.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this one, visit us online at physiology.org/journal/AJP Heart.